Oikos presents 15 Seconds of Strength.
Here we go. Steve's got a trunk full of groceries and no one to help him.
Oh, that's tough, Jim. Looks like a 5-trip load at least.
He grabs the first bag, the second. Bob, it looks like he's trying to do it all one trip. He shimmies the door open, steps over the dog. Oh, and he stumbles.
Oh, right into the kitchen without missing a beat. Mm. Jim, now that's a man who eats his protein-packed Oikos.
With 15 grams of complete protein in each cup, Oikos Triple Zero can help build strength for every day. Oikos, stronger makes everything better.
Go beyond the norm. If the norm is, let's use hand drafting, go beyond it. Go into CAD, go into BIM softwares, learn computational design, learn programming, very important.
You're about to enter the Ak-Yong Podcast.
Ak-Yong Podcast.
India's first and very own architecture podcast, where you'll hear the insights, experiences, and journeys from India's leading architects. No matter what your skill level is, together we'll build on our knowledge and share architecture's greatest stories ever told. Now, here's your host, Manish Paul Simon.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Ak-Yong Podcast. Now this episode and the coming few episodes are going to be a little different because we're going to have guests from overseas. They're going to be taking us on their architectural journeys, right from architectural school to transitioning to their first jobs, and then eventually going to jump into BIM, computational design and scripting, because that seems to be pretty much where most of us architects are headed to. I've also got a big announcement for you. We started our Patreon page where we put up exclusive content. You can head to akyan.com/patreon or patreon.com/akyan. Now you could support us by even $1 a month where you'll get access to exclusive content. And then we have tier 2, which is Akyan Fan, where you can support us with $5 a month. Here you'll get a shout out of your name in the after show, a personalized video thank you from me, the ability to vote on upcoming podcast episodes, and you'll also get access to our Discord chat server. If you become a super fan, you'll get the exact same rewards as before. Plus, you'll get a personal phone call from me, and I'll help you in your architectural journey. And finally, we have another last level, which is limited to just one Patreon supporter, Ak-Yan Gold. You get access to all the previous benefits that I mentioned. Plus, you get a shout out on all our episodes. Guarantee. So do head to patreon.com/akyan and hopefully I'll be getting my first few Patreon supporters by this week. Alright, let's head to the episode. In this episode, we have with us a Nigerian-based architect. He's also a design technologist, computational designer, and a BIM specialist. This is architect Christopher Ibegbulem. So here's a brief on Christopher to give you some context. He completed his Bachelor of Science in Architecture from University of Nigeria in Nsukka in 2017. He's now working as an architectural assistant with Harcourt Aduke Associates, where he plays a major role in the implementation of BIM and BIM training. He also works as a partner with Blaze Inc., a design technology firm based out of Abuja, which helps AEC firms work smarter through the implementation of BIM technology and more. In this episode, Christopher takes us on his journey in architecture and his experience in architectural school in Nigeria, how he was introduced to the world of BIM, what a typical BIM training entails, what plans he has in the future, his take on the AEC industry in Africa, and of course some great advice for young architects. We've written extensive show notes for this episode along with the links on akyan.com/29. Without further ado, here is architect Christopher Ibegbulem building a career in BIM. He starts off by sharing how he got into architecture. Let's go.
Yeah, okay. My journey into architecture actually started from my days in secondary school, which is part of the educational system we have here in Nigeria. While I was in secondary school, I had an elder brother who was in architecture then, and he used to come home with some of his tools. T-square, set square, scale rule, and, you know, the pen, 0.0, 0.1, 0.5, and all that. And I was usually fascinated about it. So, I mean, my dad actually really wanted me to study accountancy prior to that. And I was gunning for, I was still not yet settled. Until one day I ventured into a technical drawing class. And I wasn't part of the class, but I just joined them. I took the assignment, did it. I got fascinated with the way I could, you know, sketch, draw, and detail some things. And when the time came to apply for university, architecture was it. And I mean, I applied, and that was how I found myself in the Department of Architecture, University of Nigeria.
All right, great. Awesome. That's a pretty cool story. Could you tell us more about the architecture course in the University of Nigeria? Like, how many years and what is your best learnings or takeaways?
Okay, it's a 4-year program. Yeah, most federal universities offer the course as a 4-year program. Some do as 5, especially technical universities, technical and technology universities.
Right.
Throughout my study in school, it was a bit of hit or miss. Someone coming in not too grounded in technical drawing. I started technical drawing in my final year in secondary school. So
okay.
I struggled a bit first semester into the first year, second year. And surprisingly, I did well in my studio courses. And I mean, that was my focus. I became in love with studio courses, especially those that kept everyone around, you know, the jokes, the bands and all that. It was quite interesting, very funny. At some point, studio was almost like my second home. If you didn't find me at home, you find me in the studio.
So this is the architectural design class, right?
Yes, exactly. So it was quite interesting. And yeah, I fell in love with design particularly. And moving on, I fell in love with applying technology to design, because that was where I started learning AutoCAD. I think that was in my second year when AutoCAD was introduced to us.
Right.
And third year, I think we started learning Revit then. One of my lecturers, yeah, started taking us on the course, computer application to architecture, and it was Revit. That was like one of my experiences with Revit. Although before then, my elder brother I told you about, who was actually studying architecture, he had already told me, because he saw me one day I was using AutoCAD and I was feeling so good about it. He came and told me I should drop that and I should learn this one. It's way better. And that was just it, not knowing.
So you got the right guidance in college itself?
Yes, from my elder brother. He was a good guy.
Awesome. And then did you have a thesis and all that?
Sorry?
Did you have an architectural thesis, like a project in your final year?
Yeah, sure. Architectural thesis in my final year was actually related to technology and architecture.
Right, right.
And surprisingly, it wasn't approved.
Okay.
It wasn't approved. And then it felt like, I mean, can I really do this? But I scaled through, and here I am.
And then you had to redo your project, or?
No, this is one. It wasn't a project. It was more like normal thesis. It wasn't really a project. We had the final year project, which was separate from our thesis.
Okay, cool.
As it was structured then, yeah.
All right. But how did you jump into the world of BIM, and how did you start getting into Revit and all these tools which are part of BIM?
Okay, my journey into Revit actually started, that was in my first year in university. I had my, like I said, my older brother who was actually studying architecture then in the different school, he was higher in class, and he saw me one day using AutoCAD, and he came and told me, look, I should use Revit. And that was my first ever encounter with Revit. I got fascinated with modeling in 3D. You know, I could spin around models, see the walls, see the doors, see shapes and all that. I fell in love with geometry. It was like a snap. I didn't even have any difficulty grasping it immediately. And then where it spurred was when I went for my industrial training, that is an internship.
Right.
Yes, that was in my third year, second semester. Okay. Then my supervisor, who was very much interested in BIM, his enthusiasm then was so high that he led me into it. Then he would give me some tasks to do in Revit, and I would struggle at some point. He would like, no, there's an easier way. If you do it this way, these are the outcomes, and this is the reason why you need to do it this way, so you get XYZ result and all that. So It was really, that was like my guardian angel. He helped me throughout that period. It was really giving me tips, showing me how it should be done, not how it has always been done. Like, because he also was exploring. Every day I come to the office, he's always eager to show me something new he discovered the previous night. And, I mean, we explored together.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
So that was where I learned Revit the most. I mean, his guide and all that. And actually using it for the first time to deliver a project, real-life project, actually. So since then, I picked interest. That was the moment where I had friends then who were, I think they were learning SketchUp then, and they were like, come over to SketchUp. It's cool. It's, you know, it's a push and pull software. You don't need to bother about geometrical intricacies, what a door is, what a wall is. But something just keep telling me, stick with Revit, learn it. Mm-hmm. It's the future as a then.
Yeah.
I stuck with it, and it's taken me far beyond just Revit. I've delved into so many other things.
Yeah, even when I was learning Revit, I thought I knew a lot about Revit, but only when I joined a big company did I know that there's much more beyond just the software, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, so could you tell us more about BIM? Like, how were you introduced to BIM, and how's the BIM scenario in Nigeria?
Okay, how I got introduced to BIM was, like I said, my supervisor then, although we didn't see it as BIM per se, but we saw it as a way of improving project delivery. And at that time, I didn't know there was something called BIM. Although I had seen it, but there wasn't there at first until when it got to a point when I joined my office, the Hakuta Duke Associates. And joining them, I discovered, when I came in for the first time, quite a very interesting office.
Mm-hmm.
I discovered some of the gaps in project delivery, especially using Revit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were quite new. They had used Revit for close to 2-3 years then when I joined, and they were picking pace. So I had to like join them. Obviously, I didn't want to go, but I didn't want to even learn AutoCAD at all. Although I later discovered it was very important and developed my skills along that.
Okay.
But then with Revit, the zeal to actually do things better is what has been my push in BIM. Because I always feel there's always a better way to do things, a better, easier, simpler, and much straightforward way than, you know, just drafting arbitrary lines and then adding meaning to it later. So that was kind of one of the reasons why I decided, you know what, BIM is the future. I have to align with it and get along. So when I joined my office, they were still using Revit, yes, but not in the aspect of BIM per se, but I saw the need to actually, you know, improve myself, and in doing that, improve every other person around me. I look at what the person is doing, and I tell the person, like, one of the questions I ask is, if you were to count this thing, how would you be able to count it? If you were to schedule it, how would you be able to schedule it?
Mm-hmm.
How would you be able to procure it? What information would they need to procure that element or that object and all that? And that was it.
Right. So there's different levels in BIM, right? We have BIM level 0, level 1, all the way to level 3, which is when you work on the cloud. So when did you start working on the cloud, or did you start... Did the office which you worked for use the cloud?
Okay, the office I worked, I am still working there, actually.
Oh, okay.
Not like I've left.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. So when I joined, they had this Dropbox account where they used to, you know, share files between consultants and clients and owners. And I felt there was a better way. After then, when I joined them, I hadn't known about BIM 360. Mm-hmm. It was my research into how to do things better that brought me into common data environments and all that. And then I came about IconX, BIM 360, new format, and the rest. But when I, like I said, when I joined, they were using Dropbox, and some projects even till now still use Dropbox due to the fact that that is how they started. So it will be kind of an overkill moving them to BIM 360 for now. But recently we have quite a few projects running in BIM 360.
Nice.
At the moment. Yeah.
But my question to you is, in Nigeria, I would say that compared to the Europe, resources is still a little difficult to find, right? So how did you manage to learn or pick up on all these skills and reach it to a level which is BIM standard?
Okay. I mean, the internet has been a very great resource.
Okay.
I could imagine how people survived when there was no internet anyways. But I had to leverage what I had, what is readily available to me, which is the internet. So every night, I mean, I spend nights, weekends, research websites with reliable information.
Yeah.
Looked up design build wiki, such pages. I looked up on the Autodesk AU classes. I mean, I'm a big fan of that. I watched them. I've been following up since AU 2016. That was the first time I knew there was something called Autodesk University. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I go in there anytime I need something. I quickly type away, start, get the information, watch videos, look at presentations and handouts and materials. The internet actually has been my great resource. YouTube is just a click away. And lucky enough, our internet over here in the country is quite stable to the point where it's reliable to an extent.
Right.
So things are quite easy to actually find if you know the right questions to ask. Yeah.
Awesome. And see, the thing about Revit is you get into BIM, and then after you get into BIM, you get into many other avenues like computational design and Dynamo and scripting.
Exactly.
Yeah. So could you tell us more about your experience working and learning about Dynamo and all these other useful add-ins?
Okay. So my journey into computational design and Dynamo and plugin was, I think when I was, at some point I was given a task to document one of our projects, and I was to do door numbers.
Right.
I mean, you know, yeah, do the door numbers and window marks and all that. And something just ticked me and said, I mean, there's an easier way to do this. I just have to, before then I had head of Dynamo. I had been like trying to like get my hands on it and stuff like that. Prior to joining my current office, mm-hmm. I was still at home. Yeah. So I had, you know, done some research, but then it seemed too difficult to like grasp until I found a need for it, which was, like I said, to number doors and windows. And that was my first ever task completed in Dynamo, successfully numbering doors and windows with Dynamo. That was actually my first task.
Yes.
And then I picked up pace, researched more, and then went into Dynamo for geometry optimization, ventured into Python, and I discovered PyRevit, which is, I mean, a very great tool and from Eshron.
Yeah.
And along the line, I started learning C#, which is also a very great programming language aside from Python, which Revit supports. So my journey into computational design actually started from having a need. I needed to number my doors and windows in a snap. And one thing about that project was that things were changing rapidly. That, I mean, when there's a change, you need to renumber all afresh. So I felt, no, I can't be doing this every time.
Yeah.
I have to find at least I have to find an easier way to get this done. And that was it. I did it. I was so happy with myself. That was a push. Like, you have to learn more. And the journey has been quite nice. When I have a task to do, first thing I think of is, how do I do this? How do I break down the logic? How do I break it down into sizable chunks and steps that are machine readable? And then, before you know it, within minutes, I've written out processes and steps and things I need to put together to get it done, and it's done. Sometimes it's not straightforward. It's not as, because you need to, you know, do some research, look up things people have done before, how they had solved those problems, people that have been in your, you know, people that had your own problems too before, and how they solved it. So, you know, gain experience from them, use it, and then replicate it. Yeah.
Nice. How does the computational thinking process begin? How do you think as a computational designer?
Okay. I think the basic principle is, first of all, we should all understand that computer is giggle, garbage in, garbage out. So we have to have that behind, like at the back of our mind. And another thing is, when I have a task, this is how I break it down. When I have a task, and first thing, I look at my time. How much time do I have?
Mm-hmm.
One. Secondly is, how many times will this thing be changing? Like, would there be changes? Would there be need to actually, like, modify some things? Would there be need to add, do some tweaking to it? And, you know, all that. So when I look at the time, okay, I have enough time. Not really enough time, but, I mean, the time is enough to actually quickly script out something or do a dynamo graph. And then recently, which I started, I think about 6-7 months ago, Rhino Insight, I use that a lot.
That is a plugin for Revit to bring in Grasshopper into Revit, right?
Exactly. So what I do is I look at the tasks. What do I need to do? I break them down into steps and processes, because truth is, computational design is actually, you know, especially visual scripting, is actually assembling steps and then connecting them into, you know, machine readable language.
Mm-hmm.
And so I break them down first, you know, try to think about it in my head. When I see I have headway, then I start, so that I know, okay, this is the next thing I have to do. And most times I walk from front backwards. Like, I walk from the end and then walk backwards. Okay, for example, like I said, I wanted to renumber my doors. First thing I did was to have, I mean, the whole entire doors, I know I want to renumber, and then walk the step back. Do I want to, you know, get it from the room? Do I want to use the room numbers? I get the rooms. Do I want to, you know, number them alphabetically or numerically? You know, all those things. These are steps I break down into, you know, machine readable language, and then run it all, and it works.
So you, like, get parameter value by name and then set parameter, and then you start from the beginning, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Awesome. Let's talk about BIM in Africa in general. Now, BIM is going to be compulsory in a lot of countries, and it's going to be implemented widely. But where do you see the AEC industry headed in Africa, and how BIM is going to play a key role in the construction industry?
Yeah, sure. BIM will actually play a very important role in the construction industry. And I'm happy. Quite recently, there's been this lots of awareness from a lot of forums, a lot of organizations, and meetups are happening, like, day in, day out. You have people, you know, preaching the word BIM. And then you have lots of enthusiastic people coming out to, like, say, look, this is the future. You have to go. We have to start doing this and all that. Yeah, we may not be where, you know, I mean, it may not be happening as fast as it is in Europe, but we're actually getting there. We're getting to the point where everybody would start demanding BIM. The awareness is building up. People are getting to know about it more and more as the day passes. And it's no longer a buzzword anymore. It's gotten to that point where it's no longer a buzzword. It's actually now a thing people demand for.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm sure if there are 100 offices in Africa and you walk into about 45 or 50 of them, someone there is preaching BIM.
Nice. And how are you playing a role in educating or teaching about BIM to the masses? I think you already have this company called Blaze where you conduct workshops and all that, right?
Yes. Blaze was actually founded out of the need to help architects, engineers, contractors, AEC professionals in general, to work smarter. Outside Blaze, I'm part of a BIM Africa community where we have groups, we have summits, we have conferences organized, and people come, attend, and then preach the word, like I said, preach the word BIM. Again, I'm also part of an AAP, which is an Autodex Academic Partner Program.
Nice.
Where which is organized by BIM Africa again, where we go to schools. You know, there's this word about catching them young. When everybody coming out from the university is preaching the word BIM and they are joining offices, there's that tendency to actually, you know, attend to their demands. Because if you're employing someone and the person is telling you, no, this is the way, this is the future, this is the way you need to work, and if you don't work that way, you lose them. Sometimes, most times, you actually don't have a choice but to, you know, align to that. So the AAP program actually is a program where we actually go to schools, talk to students about, you know, BIM, the future, computational design, collaborative working, and all that. So, yeah, I make myself available for such opportunity. Whenever it's possible, I attend conferences, give talks, even do workshops for people and clients also.
Brilliant. That's brilliant, Christopher. I think you're like one of the key people who's going to play a big part when it comes to BIM in Africa in the future, I'm sure.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. You also create online courses, or how was your introduction with the online courses? Because I think I saw on Blaze where you guys have created an online course as well, right?
Yes, the online courses. Actually, we just launched that recently.
Okay.
And our first course was on smart homes. Yeah, my partner Blaze, he actually thought that. It's about smart homes.
Okay.
And we have plans in the future to actually add more courses about BIM, digital twin, collaborative working. And we want to make it in such a way it's African friendly first before, because there's this peculiarity we have down here in Africa where it may not be similar to what's happening in Europe and Asia, but it's quite a bit different. I mean, what I mean is we'll try to tailor it towards our own peculiar needs down here. So, yes, online courses, actually, are things we have in the pipeline coming up.
Right, right. Nice. And also, could you tell us more about your BIM workshop or BIM training? Like, what does a typical BIM training entail for you guys?
Okay. Typical BIM training is... We actually go to the offices when offices actually invite us for workshops and training. We go in, we try to understand, first of all, we try to understand what they do, what they currently do, and how that plays, how that interfaces with technology. And when we're satisfied with the benchmark and results we get, because we actually pass around questionnaires, we talk to designers, especially if it's a consultancy outfit, talk to designers, talk to people in management, because they too are very important. They are actually key in implementing BIM in offices, in projects, actually. So after that, we have something like an evaluation system where mm-hmm. we show them where they are, where the industry is. More like they can see themselves as we give them a score sort of, and then tell them, look, this is where the industry is, and look at where you are, and look at the things you need to do to actually step up.
Right, right.
You know, break it down into processes and roadmaps for them, so that they will be able to follow it without actually overwhelming themselves. Because, implementing BIM takes time, yeah, and also costs. We factor that also in. So when we do that, most times they are happy. They're like, wow, okay, nobody has actually done this for them. I mean, most times people just preach BIM and they don't really talk about the hurdles one has to cross in implementing BIM in projects.
Mm-hmm.
So after that, we'll get the go ahead. Okay, yeah, where do we start from? And then with that, we follow the roadmap as it is, and we'll keep on progressing and keeping up. Also running benchmarks also to like say, okay, at the end of this project, look at what did you learn? What were our goals? Did we achieve them? Mm-hmm. Were we able to achieve most of the things we said we want to achieve with this project? If yes, then we take that good. Where can we improve? Where can we add, where can we add some flavor of technology more to mm-hmm. the process and all that? So most times it's been embraced. So the process has been embraced. Then talking about when we go for summits or conferences, we try to take people through the steps, through the process. We talk about BIM, the levels of BIM, the dimensions of BIM, then how the progression, the typical BIM curve, the efforts required in BIM projects and all that. So, yeah.
Yeah, all right. What is the most challenging project that you worked on which had implemented BIM?
Okay, it's one of the projects actually that I think it's nearing completion at the moment.
Nice.
It was a residential project actually.
Okay.
And I talked to my managing architect then, told him actually we can use this project to, as a pilot project for BIM. And he was like, okay, yeah, we could. Then it was quite difficult getting the structural and mechanical engineers involved because, truth be told, most of them are not yet, they're not yet caught up with the BIM wave.
Yeah.
They're still to the CAD and all stuff.
Yeah.
Exactly. So what I did to help at that point was I took over the modeling of both MEP and structural systems.
Oh, wow. That's a lot of work.
Yeah. Yeah, quite a lot of work.
Okay.
So... So they send me card, like they issue card drawings to me, and then from there I take it up and then model. But what I did was let them know that I needed their information in a particular manner so that I don't have to rework on the card first before I could, model out of it. It was quite challenging because I was juggling between architecture, structures, and mechanical systems. And
did you do the clash detection on Navisworks?
Class detection actually was just very basic. It was happening in Revit because Revit has some kind of interference checking system native, which is not as robust as Navisworks, but because of budget and then I was sort of the one, I was like a one-man team doing architecture, structures, and that's architecture modeling, structural modeling, MEP modeling, and all that. So class detection was typically in Revit with the interference check.
But did it work out on the site from all that modeling that you did and from the BIM model that you created?
Yeah, it did. It did, actually. The thing was that, we submitted in the submission. The deliverable was in 2D, which was quite painful because all the work had, all the effort and work, I put into the project actually went back to, CAD and PDF and all that. But it was a great learning process for me. As for the contractor who was on the project, he was quite happy. There were very few clashes, very few problems, and things were resolved in the fly. When there were issues, I referred to the model and then had it resolved and we issued back to the contractor.
Great. Awesome. Generally, the process is that you learn Revit, then you jump into Dynamo, C#, Python, and then eventually machine learning and AI. So,
exactly.
What do you feel would be bigger than BIM that is fast approaching?
For now, I still think BIM will still be available, at least in the next 10 years. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, what is to come is what I may not be able to point my finger to. But recently, we've been hearing the word digital twin, machine learning, artificial intelligence being applied to being apply to projects. Yeah, this, I'm happy at the pace at which things are changing. 3D printing and all that. Going on forward, what I see is BIM tools will become, you know, I'm talking about between now and 10 years to come, BIM tools will become easier to use because a lot of them right now are quite cumbersome. They are quite, yeah. I mean, it takes a lot of time to gain expertise on them. You have to actually delve deep into the software to like use. But I think going forward, BIM will become very easy that even the layman can understand. Mm-hmm. And once that happens, projects become easier, smoother. Collaborative working will become a thing. Because right now, I think there's still that working in silos activity going on where people just do their thing and then dump it over on someone.
Mm-hmm.
But going forward, collaborative work will be a thing where you now have, rather than having project teams who are only interested in their own goals and profit, but to be a collaborative effort where everybody has a shared risk, shared goals, everybody just wants the project to succeed. And that. Then technology side, yes, digital twin, and I'm quite happy with what is emerging from there. Anything that comes after BIM, I'm definitely sure I'll be part of it. If it's digital twin, if it's machine learning, if it's AI in practice, yeah, I'll definitely be there myself. I'll definitely be doing that also.
Yeah, and we also have big data, right? So BIM plays a big role in big data as well.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think we covered most of it, but what would be your future goals and where do you see yourself maybe 5 or 10 years from now?
Okay, future goals, I intend to work on more BIM projects where the way I put projects, what do I learn from them? What are my takeaways? What are my drops? And moving on, I intend to use more of technology to leverage projects. I believe in working smart, where things are done with deliberate effort and reason and not just arbitrary. Because, right now there are a lot of time wasted, money and all that on projects simply because we have not really sat down to think about how do we do this, how do we do things better. And I see myself working in projects that are quite smart, because at some point in the future, you have what you start calling smart projects, where things are happening on the fly and everyone is leveraging technology. Everyone is aware of the benefits of using technology. There won't be the naysayers and stuff like that. And then 5 years from now, Blaze will be on full course, you know.
Awesome. What made you decide not to do a master's in architecture? Generally, a lot of us think about doing master's, right?
Okay. At some point, I had actually thought of, should I go for a master's in architecture or master's in computer science and all that? I'm still undecided, but I'm leaning more and more leaning towards computer science. Master's in computer science.
Yeah, that's pretty understandable, I guess.
if at all I didn't study architecture, I would have gone for a degree in computer science.
I would have done the same as well. Yeah, but don't you feel that diminishes the role of an architect and that role of, you know, design playing a key role as an architect?
I don't think it does. I have this argument that everyone should know how to build their own tools. If you're able to build your tools and work and make your tools or tweak your tools to match your workflow, that's fantastic. If you're able to take, for example, someone is able to build a plugin for Revit that matches their workflow and makes them work twice as fast as they could before, that's a plus. I don't see it as a problem. Even going forward, you have offices and architectural offices employing, you know, programmers and all that. That's because there's that need to actually make things better and kind of like make things happen faster, tweak the software to work I mean, the software will now, rather than being just a tool, becomes partners within offices. So offices are revolving around workflows, and the programmers are, you know, working in day in and out to make sure that they optimize the tools to get better results. So I don't really see it as a problem per se. It's not even a problem. If I know how to build my tools out, I definitely would be able to work better.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel that in the future, architects would start hiring programmers more than just architects, right?
Exactly. Technology has come to stay. We can't fight it. It's high time architects started embracing technology. It's high time they started getting to know how to build their tools, how to use the tools beyond just the, you know, conventional design method and all that. Yeah.
All right. So before you go, what advice would you give to maybe young students of architecture and architects just getting started?
Okay. My advice to young professionals, those new entrants into the industry, those still in the universities, they should go beyond the norm. If the norm is, let's use hand drafting, go beyond it. Go into CAD, go into BIM softwares, learn computational design, learn programming, very important. I mean, you will not regret learning programming. I mean, that skill will never, ever be wasted, because the future actually would need a lot of us. I mean, we at some point would have ourselves building our tools that would fit into what we do as professionals. Most of the time we have tools that were built by other people, and we have to fight tooth and nail to get them to, you know, match our needs. But then this time around, learn it, master it if possible, and then you will never regret that. Then also I encourage them to like engage in collaborative working. Right from the university, we are actually taught to work in silos, which is not very good. I mean, yeah. If I had my way, that is one of the things I'll go to schools and start preaching, that everybody, they should work collaboratively. Because truth be told, you can't even do it alone. You can't do it alone.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. Yeah, I think our educational systems are obsolete considering what's happening in the world, right?
Exactly. So if I had my way, like I said, I'll go to schools, I'll try to get all the industry professionals, like students, bring them together, if they could work on projects together, get to know how each and every one of us, the roles we all play in the industry. Yeah, that would really help, because when you graduate, you actually want to look for people that work the same way you work, collaboratively, and one collaborative project actually have better outcomes than ones that, I mean, the participants are working in silos.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's no doubt about that. Yeah.
All right, let's quickly just jump to the quickfire round, and then I'll let you go.
Okay.
All right. So which book has inspired you the most as an architect?
The book that inspired me the most is one written by, I can't really remember his name, but it's not really architecture per se. It's the BIM Manager. I read that book. I read it. Yes, that's the name of the book. And it's one thing that has spurred me into my journey in BIM also. It helped me to like know about the do's and don'ts, the typical working through. I mean, I came into the industry without a full knowledge about the industry. I came in and things were just happening, and I had to keep up, I had to catch up. So that book actually gave me headway. It was a book that actually led me to know how everybody thinks in industry, because the book covers about not just architects, talks about engineers, service engineers, consultants, and clients. Yes.
So this is by Holzer Domnick, right?
Yes.
All right. In if you ever get an opportunity to work with someone in collaboration, who would it be?
Eckhart Schweinsteiger. He is a BIM lead, Zaha Hadid architect.
What would you have chosen had you not taken up architecture? I think I know the answer to this.
Yeah, computer science.
Yeah.
I would definitely pursue a degree in computer science. Sometimes I wish I did. Like, I had a double degree or something.
Which city would you consider your favorite?
Oh, Shenzhen. I mean, I like the kind of technology that is coming out from Shenzhen, the kind of things they do. The city looks like, it looks very smart.
But don't you feel that you're monitored all the time?
No, I don't feel so.
All right.
But I mean, I'm just so fascinated about that city. It's one of the places I feel like I should visit, just to have an idea of how things happen there, the kind of buildings I see, especially when I Google and see some buildings in Shenzhen.
Yeah, absolutely. Shenzhen is definitely a place to be if you're into entrepreneurship and creating stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah. And my last question to you is, what does a daily routine in Christopher's life look like, right from morning till you go to sleep?
Okay. Wake up in the morning, try to like catch up with one of the AU classes I've bookmarked. Once I do that, jump into the restroom, have my bath, move out to work. At work, typical work activities, check out project, do some modeling, try to like do some computational design on, look at things that need to be, fastened up, especially things that I know I would have thought of the previous night. Something, one task that I know I have to do. And spend the night researching and trying to like find a way to get it done faster. So when I get to the office, I hit it. I just go straight. It's one of the first things I do. Then look at my mails. Close from work. When I'm done with work during the day, I get home, meet my family, and then straight up back to the computer. I'm almost like should I call it triangular?
So your mom must be complaining all the time, right? My son is always on the computer.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right, Christopher, I think we had a great session and there was a lot of golden nuggets that you shared. I'm 100% certain that our listeners will learn a lot from this episode. Thank you for coming on. What is the best way our listeners could get in touch with you?
Okay, get in touch with me, LinkedIn. I have my LinkedIn profile. I am / Extover. That is my LinkedIn page. I'm on LinkedIn. Or you can search my name, Christopher Ibebulem. That's one of the easiest ways to, contact me. I'm also on Twitter also.
You're pretty active on Twitter. I think I found you on Twitter.
Yes, I am active on Twitter also. I mean, LinkedIn and Twitter are social media where I'm very active.
Yeah, LinkedIn is definitely a place to be if you're if you want to like develop your career. And
exactly, yeah. I learned a lot from LinkedIn Learning. LinkedIn Learning is one of the places where I invested a lot in learning.
Yeah, I think I should ask you one more question. What would be like the top 5 resources to learn and get into BIM?
Okay, I use LinkedIn Learning, Think Parametric. That is obviously for computational design.
Yeah, Think Parametric.
Think Parametric. Then YouTube, definitely YouTube. There's this a very, very good friend, Gavin Crumb.
Yeah, I follow his channel. It's pretty good. Aussie BIM Guru, right?
Exactly, Aussie BIM Guru. That's another one. Then I hop into the Dynamo forum. I'm quite active there also. Like I go in there to get things done. And recently, Rhino Insight. I mean the forum for that. That's another place. But for BIM, LinkedIn Learning, for parametric design, Think Parametric, for BIM and parametric modeling, also BIM Guru on YouTube. Dynamo Forum, very important. I mean, if you want to really get your hands on Dynamo, you need to get your hands dirty inside the forum, like dig deep in the forums. Because there are a lot of people there to help you. get things done. Then if you're on the Rhino side, you use the Rhino Forum, the MacNew Rhino Forum.
Yeah. All right, great. So I think that covers pretty much most of what we wanted to ask you. But in case we left out something, it would be awesome to have you on in the future episode. And let's see where you are then and probably discuss more about BIM computation. And hopefully, I think you'll be into machine learning and AI then by then, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Thanks a lot, Christopher. I'll see you in the next episode.
You're welcome.
You've been listening to the Ark Young Podcast. We're still building the community. Please share this knowledge with someone you know who could benefit. Just send them to arkyoung.com, where you'll find our free newsletter and for more podcast episodes. Search for the show on any major podcasting platform. Don't forget to subscribe where you're listening right now. And if you liked it, leave a rating or review.
Open the door to huge savings now at Menards. Enhance the appearance of your home with a new stylish garage door. Choose from our large in-stock selection of ideal garage doors or design your own using our free garage door designer in-store or on Menards.com. Save big on ideal garage doors. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save.